court is ready to hear arguments from petitioners in National County Mutual Fire Insurance Company and Consumers County Mutual Insurance Company v. Randall Johnson.
May it please the court, Mr. H. Robert Powell, defendant
argument,
petitioners, reserving 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, Bob Powell, recusing Bruce from the petitioner. The issue before us on this petition is whether an insurer is required to indemnify and defend on a policy of insurance when the husband was sued by the wife for negligent injury to the wife in the family automobile, where the policy that we're concerned with was mandated by the State Board of Insurance, and where the policy contained an excluding claims of family members. Now, this is not a case, of course, that deals with the question of whether the husband can sue the wife or vice versa. It's not a case where we're concerned with whether the wife can levy on the assets of the husband to enforce a judgment that was made. This is only a case to determine whether or not the insurance policy containing a family member exclusion can be set upon to satisfy such a judgment. Now, as far as we can find, there is no case that holds that by the mere fact of the abolition of intra-family tort immunity, does there arise a public policy which would invalidate family member exclusion. In fact, the respondent expressly states in brief that they don't contend that there is. So the question becomes down to really one thing. Does the Texas Motor Vehicle Safety Responsibility Act, or some policy emanating from it, override the freedom of contract? Or does it override the exercise by the State Board of Insurance of its statutory duty to promulgate policy? Now, in making this decision, this court should give great weight to the State Board of Insurance's own interpretation of its authority when the State Board in 1987 promulgated the endorsement, mandated the endorsement for the family member exclusion. This court should also give great weight to the fact that after 1987, when the State Board of Insurance promulgated the family member exclusion, the legislature amended both the Motor Vehicle Safety Responsibility Act and the insurance code and did not curb the authority that the State Board of Insurance acted upon when it promulgated the state the family member exclusion.
How is the state legislature's mandate for compulsory minimum liability insurance limits furthered by an exclusion for interspousal and interfamily exclusions under this policy? Isn't this the same question really the court had to deal with in Stroessner with regard to uninsured motorist stacking and conflicting with the mandated legislative coverage?
Well, I don't think so for these reasons. The state board, of course, has to deal with affordability and availability of insurance. And so one of the issues it must be concerned with is the cost of insurance. And so it can justifiably look at what should be excluded from a policy in order to achieve affordable and available insurance in the amount of the minimum limits, which are explicitly set forth in the Motor Vehicle Safety Responsibility Act.
But doesn't the State Board have the responsibility to see that the coverage is offered by insurance companies in this state adequately meet the need for insurance?
Yes, Your Honor, that they do, and they have a responsibility to make sure it's available and it's affordable and that they're a solvent insurance company. And the question is what is the need? Obviously, there can be a point where the need far exceeds all of the availability of the resources to provide it. And the State Board has to draw a line of what cost can be charged in order to assure that all of the liability, at least a minimum of liability, limits can be available to the consumers of Texas. Now, I think it's important that...
Are you saying then that by putting the family exclusion there, then if you want to leave your family out, you can have a little cheaper policy, but if you want to cover your family, you have to buy another policy?
That's a good point, because the state board and the legislature provided for personal injury protection insurance to cover family members. And that covers, that's first party insurance to cover first party members. So there is provision provided within a liability insurance policy for family members. But the state board cannot...
But you can choose not to do that and still have the minimum coverage that the law requires.
That's true. You, under the conditions set forth in the code, somebody can choose to waive personal injury protection coverage. Now, insured also has other options to insure his family members, which may be more effective and provided at less cost than providing than it would cost him to provide in the form of liability insurance. For instance, there's health insurance, there's disability insurance, and there's, of course, life insurance. And all of those can be, those premium dollars that would have been devoted to extra coverage, if you will, on the liability policy could be diverted to these other policies to provide a broader base insurance protection for the family. And that's certainly a very rational basis for the State Board of Insurance to make this exclusion, because it's looking to provide the most bang for the buck, if you will, with the insurance dollar.
Do you contend that if you run afoul of the law for not having minimum insurance, then you have to get a policy that meets the proof of financial responsibility for the future because you had an accident or some other problem, that policy must cover these types of claims?
If it's a certified policy, yep, must it cover the family member claims? I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because I think you look at the Motor Vehicle Safety Responsibility Act as a whole. And what was the purpose of the entire act? You recall that the act had its origins in 1951 when what is now the certified policy provisions were first passed. And then the mandatory insurance provisions were passed in 1981. At those times, there was no family member liability because we had intra-family tort immunity. It was only until the period 1986 through 1988 that we developed intra-family tort immunity. Tort immunity was abolished. So in the historical context of the Safety Responsibility Act, we can see that it was only intended to protect members of a vehicle, persons operating vehicles on the highway, from other members operating motor vehicles on the highway, because when the act was created, that was the only kind of liability that existed. Now, if you add that, in 1987, after the Jelani and the Price and the Sneed case, or at about the same time, the State Board promulgated this exclusion, which essentially, as far as insurance companies were concerned, brought the claims back to where it was with interfamily immunity. And then subsequent to that time, the legislature amended both the Insurance Code and the Safety Responsibility Act and did not abrogate the authority that the State Board sought to assert.
But Section 21B2 says that the policy, and it's not clear if this is just a certified policy, but it does come under that section, shall pay all sums which the insured shall become legally obligated to pay. So if the law changes, why don't the policies have to change?
Because, again, I believe that the act was intended to cover motor vehicle operators generally, like in face of other motor vehicle
families. You're saying this law, this was written whatever it was in 1951 when the
yes,
scheme came up, the intention of the legislature was policy to cover what the law covered then. So if an exclusion is in there that if you contribute, if a plaintiff, if a person who sues to ensure it is contributory negligence, you don't have to pay, that would still be valid even after the legislature abolished contributory negligence in 1973.
That's correct. Now, I think it's important what the legislature did, as I said, after the family member exclusion, because I think that validates, that approves what the State Board of Insurance had done. You know, it would be a curious thing if our scheme of regulation of insurance was that the State Board of Insurance's powers would be restricted by a statutory context outside of the insurance code. It would be curious also if the State Board of Insurance powers were restricted by language as obtuse as we find in the Safety Responsibility Act. And it would be curious too why the State Board conduct was not abrogated by the legislature when it amended the act at the later point. Now, the statutory scheme that I've set forth in the historical context that I've been talking about, where the act was intended to benefit operators of motor vehicles and claims against operators of motor vehicles rather than family members, that's the same sort of scheme has come up before other courts in other states. I think we cited some of them to you. Certainly the Indiana case, the Transamerica against Henry, was one of them. It had a not dissimilar historical context to its statute and a not dissimilar statute. And the court said, look, we're not here, this statute is not here to talk about family responsibility by motor vehicle owners against their own family. It's supposed to assure the motoring public that other motorists out there have financial responsibility. So I think the Henry case, there's cases in Oklahoma and Arizona as well, and those are cited in our brief. But there are other legitimate purposes to the this family exclusion other than the cost saving. There's the question of collusion. Now this court dealt with collusion in the intra-family tort immunity question, and finally discounted it, saying that there was the judicial system had tools to deal with that kind of a problem. But when you inject insurance companies into the situation, we have a new level of problem, because now we have not a question of collusion on the court, where the courts have tools to deal with the situation, that is, cross-examination, testimony under oath, discovery. We have now an insurance company who deals with many more claims than are ever brought to court. It has to deal with the possibility of undetected collusive conduct by its insurers. That causes a greater cost of adjustment, of investigation, to try to detect those claims, to adjust those claims, and settle them. And then there's another thing that the family member exclusion does for us. And it's akin to the collusion, but it's not in the collusion camp, because it prevents a more insidious type problem. And that is an impairment of the adversary system. You know, in the family member litigation type situation, there are no true adversaries. Only the insurance company, the outsider, is the adversary. What many have called the crucible of truth of the adversary system is not there. Because if the choice becomes, are the family's assets going to bear the burden of injury to a family member? Or is the family member's insurance carrier to bear the burden? Can we realistically expect the family member who is the alleged tortfeasor to be a zealous advocate, because his innocence, if proven, will only dissipate the assets of the family estate. So the State Board of Insurance had good, rational reason for the exclusion. Its exclusion was implicit.
Your time has expired. Did somebody ask you a question? Are there any questions? Thank you.
May it please the Court, Mr. Thomas Davis will present our response.
Can you help with comment on the Court's good fortune in starting a new year with so many friends? The arguments that are made by the insurance industry, we have them over here, have been rejected by 9 different appellate judges, 3 different appellate courts, Austin, Dallas, and Houston, without dissent. The statute involved here states that no motor vehicle shall be operated without auto liability insurance. Then it says that all such policies shall pay all sums which insured shall become legally obligated to pay as damages arising out of the use of a motor vehicle. The insurance industry says all doesn't mean all. Insurance industry says that all doesn't mean Mrs. Johnson. They say that all means all of the general public, but that since Mrs. Johnson is a wife, she isn't a member of the general public. How about a son? How about a daughter? How about a ward? Are they members of the general public? And why should they be set aside? No such restrictive meaning of general public is permissible under this act.
Mr. Davis, so can the legislature, in its wisdom, decide that all public doesn't include family, and that insurance policies ought to be made available to cover families separate and outside of this particular type of policy? They look at the insurance scheme as a whole and say that insurance companies may write this kind of policy for everybody but family, and then another kind of policy for the family. Is there anything constitutionally wrong with the legislature doing it that way?
Well, I would think the legislature, if they clearly did it, they could do it. That's what this is about. Is the legislature going to decide, or is the board going to decide, or they're going to ask this court to decide whether we ought to have that exclusion or not? But the legislature hasn't done it. They've said all, and when they enacted this, they said as the reason was for the protection of all citizens of the state. Now, I assume Mrs. Johnson is a citizen of this state.
Counsel, you refer to language in 21B.
Yes.
Of 6701. And 21A says a motor vehicle liability policy, the term is used in this act, shall mean an owner's or operator's policy of liability insurance certified as provided in section 19 or 20 as proof of financial responsibility.
Yes.
Now, how is it clear that 21B, which starts off such owner's policy of liability insurance shall include, how is it clear that that language refers to every policy written among the general public, as opposed to those that are certified policies after someone has been caught defection?
That's not the restriction of that, Your Honor. This statute started off with the financial responsibility that you waited till you had your first bite. Now they say that you've got to have it to go with. You've got to have it to get your insurance. You've got to have it to get your sticker. You've got to have it to register your car. it is a requirement and is not limited to those. In fact, I would say that there's very little use for that old theory of certification. Because when they came in and said, now everybody's got to use it, whether you've had a wreck or haven't had a wreck, you've got to have it to begin with to show for the future. You've got to show today that you've got financial responsibility for the future. That's why you have to have it every time you turn around.
Mr. Davis, following up on the chief's question, how does, my understanding of the scheme would be this, that the Act requires everybody who drives an automobile to get a policy of liability insurance.
Yeah.
That covers whatever they'll be liable for. I assume an insurance company to write policies in Texas has to write a policy that comports with this statute. Coming down to my individual contracting with an insurance company, I may violate the statute because the insurance that I have on my car doesn't in fact cover everybody, and therefore my insurance doesn't comport with the statute. How does that get to the next step that says the particular policy the insurance company sold to me as a matter of law has to cover all of the liability issues, even if the contract itself does not? How do I get to that obligation on the insurance company to pay even though the contract doesn't require it?
Well, I think first you hold that exclusion is invalid, which I think it is, because it's in conflict with the statute, and therefore it's unenforceable, so it wasn't even there.
So I guess that comes to my question. Are you saying that the Vehicle Responsibility Act statute requires that if an insurance company sells me an insurance policy, it must cover everything that I'm liable for? And the statute puts that burden on the insurance company. They cannot sell a policy in Texas to an automobile driver that does anything less than what the law in Texas says that driver would be liable for their conduct.
I think that's absolutely right. And they said that's what it's got. It shall provide this coverage. Everybody must have it, and here's what's got to be in it.
But what I'm asking is, does that statute apply to the driver of the car, their obligation on what they buy, or does that statute apply to an insurance company that's selling the policy?
One, I think it applies to the board in determining what goes into a policy. The insurance company can't decide to write whatever they want to about exclusions and things of that kind. It's up to the board to mortgage the policy language in keeping with the statute. And it says that all policies must provide for all liabilities. And that means that if invalid, this court has held on other occasions that any conflict with the statutory language, it's invalid. It was in the uninsured motorist, I think it's a Schaefer case. But that's in fact what happened. It's just so it wasn't there. It's in conflict with the statute and therefore it's invalid. I don't think there's any argument about that. It's in conflict.
How do you respond to the argument that's been made that family member exclusion was put in by the insurance board after the Act was passed, and then the legislature had an opportunity to review the interpretation of the Act and determine whether or not the family member exclusion was violative of the Act, but they chose not to do anything, so the legislature is deemed to have approved the interpretation of the Act.
I don't think that's a very valid observation. Anybody knows how the legislature works. That was never brought up, it was never before them, and if it wasn't, then you could presume that they agreed to lock the thing if they didn't act. I don't pay much attention to that argument. I think it's not realistic. Back to the...
Would your argument mean that a prudent insurer who has also bought PIP coverage would be entitled to double the coverage?
you're entitled to PIP as the first party obligation. The liability part would depend upon the negligence of the driver, just like if another driver in another car that ran into you, you'd be in the same situation. But as far as their general public, as I said, when it was enacted, they referred to all citizens, and that's quoted in the Haymaker versus American State. All through the act, they talk about injury or death to any person, liability to protect any person. Then person is defined in the act as every natural person, firm, corporation, or association.
Why is the state board, would a policy be valid if it included the first party liability?
It did what, John?
The way, when you talk about all person meaning everybody, does that mean a policy that can be written that says you can't sue yourself? Or that it wouldn't cover a suit?
If there's not legal liability, then the argument doesn't stand. This is all legal liability. That's why you must have the jurisdiction distinguished from other states, is if you haven't done away with the family immunity doctrine, then this never comes up. This is only where there is liability for the husband, the statute requires insurance, and the statute says that it shall cover all liability. Those are the three elements that are present here, and to some extent distinguish some of the other cases in that they don't apply. This court has held in Dairyland that the Texas Motor Vehicle Safety Law applies to all potential claimants. Submit all means all. We've heard reasons why we should have this exclusion. I don't feel that this court is in a position to decide what insurance we should have and what we don't, but only whether it lives comports with the statutory requirement. As far as reasons go, look at the transcript of the hearing before the insurance board. It's cited in the brief of pages. And what did the commissioner say? He said, I'm not interested in your history. I'm not interested in your economics. He was told it didn't affect race. He said, I don't think it's good public policy for a wife to sue her husband. It ought to be against the public policy of the state, even though this court has held it wasn't. He says, I don't think they ought to do it, and I'm going to do anything I can to keep them from it. Now, that doesn't sound like a very good reason for the board to adopt this policy. They haven't mentioned rates. I'm surprised that usually the thing that they come up with, there is no evidence. As to that, I would say that if you look at the record, you'll see that the staff said this isn't going to affect the rate. But even if it did, it's interesting to notice that after the exclusion was adopted, the rates didn't go down. So it's difficult to understand or imply that if it's taken out of that, they're going up. But that's most of their briefing. We have other cases involving the insurance code 5.06, your uninsured, underinsured, has the same identical language in it, except it says, for all sums which the insured shall be legally entitled to receive, rather than pay out. That's the only difference between those two terms. And this court has held on many occasions that provisions that violate 506 are invalid and unenforceable. And I submit that if all means all on that statute, why doesn't it mean all in the liability statute? I would like to point out that one of the amicus curiae briefs here by Mr. Radicke has the most complete and thorough listing and discussion of the out-of-state cases that appear in any of the briefs. It's very meticulously done, and I think it covers every case in the United States involving this exclusion. I would recommend that that be one very good source if you are interested in those cases. And the huge majority is held, as the other appellate courts in this state have held, under almost identical situation and language. Over and over and over, they've held all means all, and if you try to qualify it, you're in violation of the statute and it's invalid. And I suggest to you that you find where those three qualifications exist. There is liability for the husband. There is compulsory insurance. It says that it shall cover all, that every case that's decided that is held to the same time.
Any questions? Anything further, counsel? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear rebuttal.
First, Your Honor, let me respond. I think I took a question by Judge Enos. Does the Motor Vehicle Safety Responsibility Act apply to insurers? Certainly the terms of the act don't. You look at Section 21, you look at Section 1A, and the statute always keys itself upon placing a duty upon the motor vehicle operator. The operator shall, and the operator shall have a policy which insures all sums to which you may become liable. And that's the reason I say it would be a strange set of circumstances to hold that that kind of provision is a provision that regulates the power of the insurance department to promulgate a policy exclusion for all the, as you point out, for all the insurance company knows, there may be another policy on some other circumstance. Now, Article 21B...
Now, before you go into Article 21, the counsel for the respondent says that many other states have done away with the family exclusion. Is there anything unique about our Texas statute that is not in common with these other states where they have done away with the family exclusion?
When you looked at the cases, you find that there are very, very many distinguishing characteristics among the cases. One of the very important distinguishing characteristics, I think, is our statutory historical context, as I was talking about earlier. The historical context we saw in the Henry case, Transamerica and Henry out of Indiana, is not unlike ours. It's very much like it, and it contains, has a similar result to our statute. There are other cases, some cases deal with is the exclusion valid to a wife, is that to a child, and a number of different circumstances. Another, I think, a very important distinction is, was the policy mandated by the State Board of Insurance? In our case, it was. We have not located in any of the other opinions any indication that the policies were mandated. In two other states, the policies were approved by the State Board of Insurance, but not mandated. So we think that that's a distinguishing characteristic. The historical context, the action of the State Board of Insurance.
But a policy being mandated by the State Board of Insurance, what strength does that add to the policy as far as the relationship with the statute?
Because the
State Board can't mandate something in contrary to the wishes of the legislature as expressed in the statute.
No, that's absolutely correct. The State Board has to act within its statutory authority, and it has to act rationally. Absolutely. But the State Board's interpretation of its power, of course, is entitled to great weight, as I indicated. And here we have the overlay to that, that the insurance code was amended subsequent to the State Board's action, and no action taken by the legislature to curb the State Board's authority, exercise authority. And you know, it's not like this exclusion came in the dark of the night. It was well known. There was a great deal of publicity about the family member exclusion. It was even the subject of, as the court would probably recall, of a concurring opinion, of an opinion in this court when it came out.
How is the respondent's position here different from what this court did in the Dairy Land Administration?
Well, first of all, Dairy Land, like a lot of other Supreme Court cases, is oversighted. And it's oversighted for the proposition that it refers to all possible claimants being beneficiaries. The language there, the facts in the case were that it was a claimant on the automobile policy who had obtained a judgment. And the question was that person entitled to, under Article 2226, to claim attorney's fees? And that's all Dairy Land spoke to. It was not as broad, and neither was Strachan. In fact, the Scarborough case, that's cited in our brief, distinguishes Strachan on a very important point, and that was that the word other in the Strachan case, where it said motor vehicle operators and others, did not mean the family members, like in that case, famous husband. So I think those are two very distinguished.
But these cases are cases where this court looked at the legal liability of the insured and looked at what the policy covers and made a determination that a board approval of an insurance contract is not something we defer to in light of the legal scheme that had been announced in the common law, by statute or common law through our court. Is that potentially correct?
I wouldn't go that far, because I don't think in Dairyland, this court was not interpreting.
Well, strike Dairyland, Strachan.
In Strachaner, that case was concerned really with stacking, whether the limit on uninsured coverage could be stacked. And in that case, I think it was dicta as well, where it talked about the and others language. And of course, that was the language that Scarborough used in saying the exclusion of a family member was appropriate.
Any other questions?
If the exclusion is valid, is the motorist required to purchase an additional supplemental policy covering family members to comply with the statute?
Is what required?
Must the motorist, to comply with the statute, purchase supplemental insurance?
If the motorist must comply with 21B, only if he is required to have a certified policy. And the court in the Dallas Court of Appeals in the Ratner case made that distinction very, very near, very exactly. The answer is, under my understanding of the Safety Responsibility Act, this exclusion is valid and no additional purchase of insurance is required, because the act wasn't intended to cover family members.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments. The foregoing causes, which were submitted on briefs and oral arguments, the marshal will now adjourn the court.